Good job. Okay, so here's what we're going to do. I know that was a little bit different, but I think the grown-ups will see where we're going here quickly. We're going to go to Judges chapter 3. Judges chapter 3. And in Judges chapter 3, if I can get it, there it is. Here's what it says. Now, these are the nations that the Lord left to test Israel. To test Israel. As I was going through this, getting ready, that first sentence, that these were the nations that the Lord left to test Israel, just kind of like seemed to resound in me. I know that a lot of times when we think about the Lord like testing, it's a quick thing for us to be like, oh, that's a little bit sneaky. Like, I think sometimes people feel a little bit betrayed by that. It's almost like the Lord is like setting up traps for them or something. But I don't think that's at all the intention, right? In fact, I know that's not the intention. It's not that the Lord is setting traps. The Lord is testing. That's a different thing. So this morning, when we asked those kids those questions, when we tested them, how do you define tests? Just shout it out. If you were to define the word test, what does that mean? John? It's an application of knowledge learned. Okay, good. Does anybody else have a different kind of spin they would put on that? To see if you learn the lesson. Okay, yeah. So like that's like the intention of the test, right? To see if they've learned, to see if they remember. And that's what's going on here. The Lord is watching his people to see if they remember. And he knows they remember, but really he needs them to see if they remember, right? Like every teacher who gives a test at school, there's lots of people in here who are teachers, like you don't give a test thinking everybody's going to get it right. A lot of times you need to see what you're teaching effectively, but you also need that child to see what they're missing, to know their own holes, to know their own gaps. And that's what's going on here. As the Lord is testing Israel, he's saying, have you remembered what I've expected of you? Do you know what you are and are not doing? And so, now these were the nations that the Lord left to test Israel. That is, all in Israel who had not experienced all the wars in Canaan. It was only in order that the generations of the people of Israel might know war, to teach the war to those who had not known it before. These are the nations: the five lords of the Philistines, and all of the Canaanites, and the Sidonians, and the Hivites who lived in Mount Lebanon, and from Mount Baal Hermon as far as Lebo Hamath. They were there for the testing of Israel, to know whether Israel would obey the commandments of the Lord, which he commanded to their fathers by the hand of Moses. So the people of Israel lived among the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, and their daughters took for themselves wives, and their own daughters they gave to their sons, and they served their gods. So the Lord was testing Israel. But what was he testing them for? He was testing them if he remembered what they were commanded about, what to do in the promised land. If we go to the next slide, there's like kind of a way to summarize that a little bit. Here was the test. This is what he was testing them on. He was testing on them if they would take the land and oppose wickedness like they were instructed to. And he was testing them on whether they would care for the people and train the people in righteousness like he had instructed them to. It's interesting when we think about Israel's conquest of the promised land. A lot of times we think of it as like a failed attempt, which it was, right? Like that's kind of the whole book of Judges, as we show that it didn't turn out like we had hoped it would, right? Generation after generation has to learn anew that they need to follow what the Lord has placed before them. But a lot of times we also think of it as a complete culling, right? A wipeout, a destroying of everything that was in that land. And there was a lot of destruction. War always brings destruction, right? There was a lot of wickedness that needed to be wiped out. But it wasn't just go and kill everything and everyone, right? Like, we know certain stories like Rahab, right? Where she was part of Jericho. She wasn't part of the Lord's people, but she was counted as one among them. And here's what I want us to kind of do as we set our standards a little bit for as we're going through the book of Judges, because we're going to see war after war after war. We're going to see destruction after destruction after destruction. here's what I want us to know what the Lord was testing them on. Right? And he was testing on them if they would take the land, if they would oppose the wicked, and he was testing them on if they would care for people and train them in righteousness. And here's where we get these things. Okay, I'm going to give out a whole bunch of verses. I'm going to ask that, I'm going to kind of assign some, if that's okay. We're going to do a little bit of like popcorn Bible reading this morning. So Kinsey, can you go to Exodus 33, verses 1 and 2? Abe, can you do Exodus 33, verse 14? Okay. Hannah, can you do Exodus 34, verses 12 and 13? Josh Ferguson, can you do, where is it? Deuteronomy 7, 3 through 4? Anna, can you do one? Okay. Can we do Exodus 35, 15 through 16? Okay. I'm going to have our folks just quickly read those passages. Go ahead. Yeah, so to go forward and to drive these people out, right? Abe, go ahead. Yes, 14. Yep, same chapter, a few verses later.
Yeah, so he said, my presence will go with you, and I will give you rest.
Yep, so they're to drive that out, and then they're to live in peace, right? Rest. All right, what do we got, Hannah? Yes. Yeah, so they're not to make treaties with the people. They're going to be a snare. You're supposed to tear down their holy places, their areas of worship, which were mostly places of sacrifice. That we won't get into it this morning, but like severe wickedness was going on in these places, okay? This is not just like they had some theological differences and they were praying in this. Like there were human sacrifices and things going on. Okay, next, Josh. You should... So we're not to intermarry. We're not to bring that into the household, right? Like that wickedness. Anna, 35 verses 15 and 16, please. So I think I probably wrote down the wrong one, but it's in that chapter. It later on goes on. Sorry, I know. Sorry, it basically goes on to explain, like, this is the, like, we're replacing their worship places with our own, right? Like, and it's done so that your kids don't, wander off into false faith, so that they don't have their lives messed up, so that we have a land that is filled with justice and with filled with righteousness and is filled with devotion to the Lord. This is an interesting thing that they don't do that at all, right? They don't clear the land, and because of that, they don't live in peace, and they intermarry, and they are caught in the snare, and quickly things go south, right? It is a thing that where like they didn't do number one very well at all. And it has a lot to do with their intention for their own good, right? Of like, you're setting up a place where there will be peace. You're setting up a place where there will be righteousness. You're setting up a place where wickedness will be opposed. Like that's the intention behind this. It's just to drive them out. But we have in contrast to that, or I guess along held with that, that the people were told to provide and to train for righteousness. And so here's a few more verses. Tabitha, can I have you do Exodus 12, verses 48 and 49? And then Autumn, can I have you do Leviticus 24, 22? Lena, can you do Leviticus 19, 34? And then Dylan, can you do Exodus 22, 21 through 27. And so we're going to see kind of like the as you're doing that, it's not just about going and taking the land. It's not just about driving people out. It's not just about opposing wickedness. It's also about caring for people and training them in righteousness. So Tabitha, go ahead and read if you could. Yes, 48 and 49. Thank you, Jeremy.
If a stranger shall sojourn with you and would keep the Passover to the Lord, let all his males be circumcised. Then he may come near and keep it. He shall be as a native of the land, but no uncircumcised person shall eat of it. There shall be one law for the native and for the stranger who sojourns among you.
Yeah, so if they're willing, if they desire, let them be circumcised. Let them be one with the people. Let them be doing the things that the Israelites do. Effectively, let them become an Israelite, right? Okay, Autumn?
You are to have the same law for the alien and the native born. I am the Lord your God.
Same law for the alien and for the native born, for the people who live among you, who were born among you, and the people who live among you, who were not born among you. Lena.
The foreigner residing among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were foreigners in Egypt. I am the Lord your God.
A lot like the last passage, but like, man, this it becomes like a theme, right? Like, and these are in the same books, the same commandments, the same mission that is given to Israel at the same time. Go ahead, Dylan.
You shall not wrong a stranger or oppress them, for you are strangers in the land of Egypt. You shall not afflict any widow or orphan. If you afflict him at all, and if he does not cry out to me, and if he does cry out to me, I will surely hear his cry, and my anger will be kindled, and I will kill you with a sword, and your wives shall become widows, and your children fatherless. If you lend money to my people, to the poor among you, you are not to act as a creditor to him. You shall not charge him interest. If you ever take your neighbor's cloak as a pledge, you are to return it to him before the sun sets. For that is his only covering. It is his cloak for his body. What else shall he sleep in? And it shall come about that when he cries out to me, I will hear him, for I am gracious.
Perfect. Thank you. So, there is the thing that, like, you'll often see on, like, the History Channel or, like, these, like, public tellings of this, the conquest of the Holy Land or the conquest of the Promised Land by Israel, is they come in and they just destroy everything, and it's wanton destruction, and it's rape and murder and pillage, and that's not at all what they're told to do, right? They are called to oppose wickedness. They're told to drive the peoples out, but they are also told that the people who are willing to no longer be a Hivite, to no longer be a Jebusite, to no longer be a Philistine, if they're willing to be an Israelite, then you take them in. You treat them as one of your own. And we see examples of this through Scripture. We see Rahab, right? We see, Ruth and Naomi. We see a lot of David's mighty men were people who were foreign-born, but were Israelites. Why? Because they had come in to be a part of God's people. They had rejected the things. They had rejected their wickedness. They had rejected the false gods. They had said, no, that's not who I am. I am choosing to be an Israelite. I'm choosing to serve Jehovah. I'm choosing to be circumcised. I'm choosing to live according to the law that is placed to his people. So I just kind of want to set the table because I don't want us to go through here and just see, like, just story after story of war and destruction and think that, like, that God is a God of like, commissioning people to wanton destruction, because that's not what's going on. And a lot of times the book of Judges and certain areas in the Bible, it's portrayed that way, okay? But that's an incomplete story. This is what they're asked to do, to oppose wickedness, to drive out the wickedness, and then to care for and train in righteousness the people that are there, the people who are willing to turn from their wickedness, okay? So all of that to just say, keep that in mind as we go through Judges over these next months, because this is not a story of only war and bloodshed. This is a story of redemption. This is a story of God testing his people. This is a story of God redeeming people who were in great wickedness. Does that make sense? Are we all tracking? Okay. We'll pick it back up then in Judges chapter 3. So, as we ended last time, and their daughter, and they gave their daughters, and they took daughters for their sons, and they served the false gods. So they're not doing this. They're not doing this. They're failing the test. And when you fail the test, there's never a good consequence, right? Like, sometimes that means, oh boy, you got to go get more studying. Sometimes that means mom and dad are going to give some discipline. It means, in the case of Israel, and the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. They forgot the Lord their God, and they served the Baals and the Asheroth, which were the false gods of fertility. Therefore, the anger of God was kindled against Israel, and he sold them into the hand of Cushan-Rishathaim, the king of Mesopotamia. And the people of Israel served Cushan-Rishathaim 8 years, and that's a hard name. I'm so glad that none of us have named our kids that. I would not want to answer questions to them on a Sunday morning. I think I'd just call them Cush. But the people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and the Lord raised up a deliverer for the people of Israel who saved them, Othniel, the son of Kenaz, and here we go, Caleb's younger brother. So this is still within the first generation of coming out of the Exodus, coming out of the wandering in the wilderness. Caleb was still alive. Joshua was still alive when that first happened. They come into this, and here Caleb's younger brother's son, Caleb's nephew, after the people were evil in the sight of the Lord and after they had been given over to this king, Cushan, Caleb's younger brother, Kenaz, had a son named Othniel. And the spirit of the Lord was upon Othniel, and he judged Israel. And he went out to war. And the Lord gave Cushan-Rishathaim, king of Mesopotamia, into his hand. And the Lord prevailed over Cushan-Rishathaim. So the land had rest for 40 years. And then Othniel, the son of Kenaz, died. As we look at that, this is like one paragraph. It covers a lot of time. It covers several decades. And it's very simple. They were not passing the test. All of a sudden, someone comes along and says, oh my goodness, we're failing this test. We need to do something about it. We need to discipline ourselves. We need to get back to remembering what the Lord has asked us to do. And he does it. And it's like, we don't know exactly, right? But it feels like overnight, and things changed. And the people of Israel served Cushan 8 years. And when the people of Israel cried out to the Lord, the Lord raised up a deliverer. And the spirit of the Lord was upon him. He judged Israel. He went out to war, and the Lord gave Cushan-Rishathaim, the king of Mesopotamia, into his hands. And he prevailed. And the land had rest, peace, for 40 years. I think a lot of times we underestimate the power that obedience to the Lord has. We underestimate the peace, the rest that can come from, like, obviously the whole land was distraught. Right, all of the people. It says the people cried out. But one man decided to lead, and one man decided to step up and take action and live up to the test, and others followed. And pretty quickly it turned around, and it was a good thing for 40 years. For 40 years. Scripture in other places, if you guys remember when we were going through our series on the genealogy of Jesus, there were several times in there where it talked about the sins of the father would pass on to the third or fourth generation, but the righteousness of a righteous man will be passed down, the blessing will be passed down to 1,000 generations. Like, a little bit of good, a little bit of righteousness can make a dramatic impact for the people coming after you. And it did. Lynn had rest for 40 years, and then Othniel died. And what happens? And the people of Israel did again what was evil in the sight of the Lord. As we were setting up this sermon series, we talked about briefly the first week or so about how, man, this is going to be a rhythm. This is going to be a reoccurring thing where we see over and over that the people of Israel have a great kind of like recovery, but it seems like their devotion is not necessarily to the Lord. It's their devotion is to that leader. The one they're really following is Othniel. They're not really following the Lord. Othniel's setting a good example, and it's creating a good atmosphere. The economy's pretty good. We're living in peace. So everybody goes along for the ride because it's better than the last guy. But they didn't really pass the test. They didn't keep their children and train their children up in righteousness. They didn't really drive out all of the wickedness. They just kind of had success for a bit. And they fall back into it because they're not truly following the Lord. They're following Othniel. At least enough of them are not truly following the Lord that it creates a generational problem where the next generation comes up and the people of Israel did again what was evil in the sight of the Lord. And the Lord strengthened Eglon, the king of Moab, against Israel, because they had done what was evil in the sight of the Lord. He gathered to himself the Ammonites and the Amalekites, and he went and defeated Israel, and they took possession of the city of palms. And the people of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. And then the people of Israel cried out to the Lord. Sounds like a song on repeat, doesn't it? The people of Israel cried out to the Lord, and the Lord raised them up for them a deliverer, Ehud, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, a left-handed man. I remember in Bible college, there was a guy who did a sermon on this, and it was like a real popular one, and he called it Ehud, the left-handed dude. That's always stuck in my mind. I always think of this every time I read this passage. But Ehud, the son of Gera, the Benjamite, the left-handed man, the people of Israel sent tribute by him to Eglon, the king of Moab. And Ehud made for himself a sword with two edges, a cubit in length, and bound it on his right thigh under his clothes. And he presented the tribute to Eglon, the king of Moab. Now, Eglon was a very fat man. And Ehud had finished presenting the tribute, and he sent away the people who carried the tribute, and he himself turned back at the idols near Gilgal, and he said, "I have a secret message for you, O king." And he commanded, "Silence!" And all the attendants went out from his presence, and Ehud came to him as he was sitting alone in the cool roof chamber. And Ehud said, "I have a message from God for you." And he arose from his seat, and Ehud reached in with his left hand and took the sword from his right thigh, and he thrust it into the belly. And the hilt also went in after the blade, and the fat closed over the blade, for it did not pull the sword out of his belly. And the dung came out. And Ehud went into the porch and closed the doors of the roof chamber behind him and locked them. And when he had gone, the servants came, and when they saw what the doors of the roof chamber were locked up, they thought, "Surely he's relieving himself in the closet of the cool chamber." And they went till they were embarrassed. But when he had still not opened the doors of the roof chamber, they took the key and they opened it. And there lay their lord dead on the floor. Ehud escaped while they were delayed, and he passed beyond the idols and escaped to Sarah. And then he arrived. He sounded the trumpet in the hill country of Ephraim, and the people of Israel went down with him from the hill country, and he was their leader. And he said to them, "Follow after me, for the Lord has given your enemies, the Moabites, into your hands." So they went down after him, and they seized the fords of the Jordan against the Moabites and did not allow anyone to pass over. And they killed at that time about 10,000 of the Moabites, all strong, able-bodied men. Not a man escaped. So Moab was subdued that day under the hand of Israel, and the land had rest for 80 years. After him, Shamgar, the son of Anath, who killed 600 of the Philistines with an ox goad, he also saved Israel. Just a little tad note, a little side note there. Oh, yeah, there was this other guy. You guys know about him, I'm sure. But they just kind of like move on, the author of the book of Judges. Here's what I want us to do. I would like for you to get in a little huddle group, go over the story of Ehud, the left-handed dude, and I want you to ask yourself or ask your kids in there, how do you see this man living up to the test that God asked him to live up to? How do you see him answering and remembering the things that the Lord has asked of, number one, of opposing wickedness and taking the land, and number two, of caring for the people and creating a righteous generation? Does that make sense? So we're going to see how he passed that test. Ready, set, go. Grab some people and talk about that. All right, so let's report back. It's not often in church that you start talking about like assassinating extremely obese people and, like, assuming they're in the bathroom. But that's where the passage leads us this morning. So we get to talk about some, like, fun stuff. I remember as a kid thinking that this story was so cool. Like, I just thought it was the greatest. Like, it seemed like some sort of, like, super spy thriller and, like, funny prank movie all at the same time to me. And I loved it. So, as you discussed it, what did you see? How did Ehud pass the test? What did he do to oppose the wicked and take the land? And what did he do to care for the people and to train them in righteousness? Josie? He killed the wicked king, right? Yeah, he did. Killed the wicked king. And the wicked king, like, we have to remember, like, this is not calling for political assassinations, right? Like, I don't want us to read this story and be like, oh, I don't like the president. That should not be your application, okay? If you're thinking that, I don't think most of you are, but if you are, don't think that. This was a wicked king who Israel had already had in the land. God had already told them to go in and take over. And what happened? He took over them, right? And he was having the people, encouraging them in the worship of Baal and Asheroth. Like, this is a different animal. Sarah, I see your hand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This one, it seems like the Lord, you know, it could just be the way that the geopolitical structure played out in that time frame. But, like, God gave them a good blessing on this one. 80 years. 80 years. And it was, he inspired them to righteousness, right? This was a man who was like, man, no one else is doing it. I guess I'm going to do it. And that takes a crazy level of boldness. Right? And it, John? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, this was a man who God moved in a it seems like a special way, in a particular way, that he had a particular job set before him. And man, can you imagine? Like, I think the entire nation is overtaken. I think it's my job to fix it. Like, that seems like grandiose thinking, but the Lord had prepared and delivered a particular man to a particular place at a particular time to do a particular thing. Like, and the boldness that takes to go in there and, like, you know, hide your sword and to, like, and then to, like, hey, I got a secret. Like, it sounds so silly. I've got a secret. Don't tell anybody. Oh, okay. Like, but, like, he was 18 years into his rule over them. Nothing had happened yet. I'm sure the king was, like, kind of lured into a false sense of security, right? Of, like, yeah, they're bringing their money to me. This guy probably wants to get in tight. He probably wants to let me know about some set of insider business deal going down that I can come on. Like, or maybe he's got some story about somebody coming up to rebel against me, like, I got a secret. Skunk. The end. Like, that's wild. The boldness in that. And then he goes back and he encourages the people. No, like, this is our chance. The Lord has made a way for the wicked king to be destroyed and for us to take our land back, for us to be the people, to obey, to get rid of the wickedness and to create a place where we can train people for godliness. I think it's, like, not just the boldness to actually perform the assassination and then to run away, but then to rally people and go right back into it, right? Like, I almost would, like, be willing to give him a get-out-of-jail-free card. Okay, like, you did a significant step. Like, good job. But no, it's, like, I'm going right back into the belly of the beast, and I'm taking people with me. Anybody else have anything they saw in the story of Ehud, the left-handed dude? Sarah. Yeah. I think what it like it probably hints at is the opulence, the lack of responsibility and the desire for just personal gratification that king had. Right? Like when we like the thing we think of most commonly when we hear about like kings going to battle is we hear the story of David and Bathsheba, right? And the springtime came and normally the kings go out to battle. Well, David didn't. Well, how is a man who is that big able to go out into battle and to lead his people, right? And it's 1 Samuel when they're asking for a king and God says, I don't know if you really want this. And they say, no, give us a king. And then Samuel comes back to the people and he says, oh, well, he's going to take your young men and he's going to turn them into warriors and he's going to go out and he's going to take all your servants and he's going to take all, like, it's not necessarily a good thing, but he's going to go into battle and he's going to do the thing that king does. Well, this man only, he doesn't do all the things the king does. He just lives off the fruits of the land and he's not able to lead in battle because he's an opulent man, and probably it is a signifier of an opulent culture. It probably hints at the extremity of what the Moabites were doing at the time, what they valued, how they lived. So it is a detail, but a lot of times little details in the Bible are there for a particular reason. They are there to hint at something else going on in the culture or the time, or to make you think of another passage where that word is used. Like, we don't know for a fact, but like, it's pointing out the flaws of the man for sure. Other thoughts? Kinsey. Yeah.
Caring is a lot of times, it means doing the harder option or the riskier option. Like, it's very rarely safe to obey God.
Yeah.
And so good leaders are able to carry God's people into those scary places with purpose.
Yeah. Good things are not always easy, and good things are not always safe. Right? Like that's a big deal. Like men, there's a reason why men oftentimes, like the thing that like shows up a lot of times is like to protect and provide, right? Like, well, guess what? Like to protect and provide, like protection means that there's something that's dangerous. Provision means that you're gonna have to put your nose to the grindstone. Right? And we have a different understanding that in our modern age where like things aren't quite as dangerous physically, and things aren't quite as laborious a lot of times for your actual day-to-day work. But man, that's still there, right? Like, and that's something that is good. Like, that's something that we, as parents, like, we need to be instilling that into our children. Just because it's hard doesn't mean it's bad. Just because it's safe doesn't always mean it's good, right? Like, this is something that we are, that is looked very favorably upon Ehud. And it seems like, again, it seems like just kind of like a detail, but no, he is bringing the people of Israel out of a slumber, out of a servitude, and into obedience, where he's able to inspire these men to step up and to destroy the wickedness, to create a place where peace can be there, where righteousness can be endorsed and instilled into the people, and not even only their own people, right? It talks about how they killed the army, right, the opposing army, but like, what happened to the women and children in there? Well, probably some of them ran away, and probably some of them wound up getting absorbed into the people of Israel in a good way, right? Like God's laws, God's ways are good for you. They're not always easy. They're not always hard. They're not always cheap, but they're good for you, right? In Exodus, in Deuteronomy, it says that we give these things to you so that you may live long in the land of your fathers, right? It's for your good. It's for your benefit. Makita. Yeah, like the guy from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. Yes, that is something that you probably should have in your mind as you're looking at this. So just a guy who just has like always wants more, right? Anyway. All that to say, I'm going to actually ask the band to come on up, but all that to say, I think that a lot of times when we go into these types of things, when we read the book of Judges, when we see these cool battle stories, right, like our view is oftentimes incomplete in them, and we think it's like, we think it's fun, we think it's like, as 8-year-old Kyle read this story, I thought it was the greatest thing ever because it like was a spy thriller. Right? It was somehow in my mind, this was a mix of like Jason Bourne and Home Alone. Like pranks and spycraft and like assassination. Like I just, maybe that's just me, but I thought it was the coolest story ever. But I didn't really think very much at all about what was the man actually trying to do? Who's opposing wickedness? He was taking the land. He was making sure that like the thing that was influential, the thing that was setting the tone, was what God had asked for the people to do. He was caring for the people and training them in righteousness, spurring them on to do more things. And we see that a little bit in Othniel, and we see that, what's the other guy's name? Ragsham or something like that? Like, we have one verse dedicated to that guy. We don't really know what he did, but it was enough like Othniel, and enough like Ehud that he got mentioned at least. It says, after that, there was Shamgar, the son of Anath, who killed 600 of the Philistines with an ox goad. He also saved Israel. Israel always needs saving, right? And that's because we, people, always need saving. We live in a world that's broken, and we live with a world that is full of wicked men and bad leaders and false gods. And that's the easy way to go. We also live in a world with some good leaders and with a real life good God who is working in his people generation by generation, trying to bring peace to the people, trying to bring peace to the land, trying to oppose wickedness and raising up people and training them in righteousness. And we get stories like Ehud, and we get stories that like are exciting and celebratory. But it's only good enough if the people actually look to the Lord instead of looking to Ehud. Because sooner or later, it goes back. And it's only good enough, in other words, it only serves well if we train our kids in it. If we show them, hey, do you remember, you probably heard about the Philistines, you probably heard about the Moabites, you probably heard about, you know, whatever the wickedness in our world is that we're opposing. Well, there was a guy named Ehud. Well, there was a guy named Abraham Lincoln, right? Like these things, like we have these same kinds of stories in our life, and we need to be pointing our kids to them, to point them to the work that God can do through a man who's willing to be bold, who's willing to stand up, who's willing to create a place where people can be trained in righteousness. And we need to train our kids in that righteousness. And that righteousness doesn't come from just doing the law. That righteousness comes from knowing the one who gave us the law. The power, the boldness doesn't come from a personality quirk. It comes from God raising up a deliverer. And ultimately, it comes from Jesus, the great deliverer, who gave his people the Holy Spirit to be full of his character, to be full of the fruit of the Spirit, to put on the whole armor of God, because we don't wrestle against flesh and blood, but against rulers and principalities. So I think I'll just leave you here this morning and ask you to have a moment of reflection, and the band will call us to worship. But ask yourself, are you passing the test? Are you opposing wickedness? Okay, I'm not calling for anybody to go out and assassinate anybody, but are you opposing wickedness? Number two, are you caring for people and training them in righteousness? Are you calling them into the battle? It might not be safe. In fact, it probably won't be safe. It probably won't look like going and fighting 10,000 men. But that's what the Lord has called his people to do. It wasn't just for Israel, right? This was, they played it out in the promised land, but this is for all of his people everywhere. To oppress wickedness, to oppose wickedness, to create a land where you care for people and train them in righteousness. So take a moment before the Lord, and the band will call us to worship.